Welcome everyone to episode 47 of Sky Splinter Assault. This is Paulie, aka Sky Serpent. I'm joined on this episode today by Archon George.
Hello everyone.
And Dark Techno Dom.
I'm back, baby.
We have a lot to talk to you about on this episode. We're going to talk about Mandrakes. That's right. The first Drakari Infantry Plastic Kit since 2019 is here. We're going to talk at the balanced data slate, Monitorum Field Manual rules commentary. We're going to talk about the rules changes, the points drops, the new detachment, Sky Splinter Assault, which we're really excited about. We're going to be looking at the detachment rule itself, enhancements and strats, datasheet winners, pain token economy. We're also going to talk about some combos, hobby ideas, because you're going to want to run lots of Archons now. Also our army last ideas, and also what's going to affect the other army. So, guys, let's go straight into it. Let's go talk about the Mandrakes. At LVO, they showed off the brand new Mandrake kit, which we are all really excited about. So, they are going to be a kill team. They're going to come in a kill team box called Nightmare, opposite the Night Lords that we've seen already. And this is hugely exciting, because if you're part of any sort of social media for Drakari, any sort of group or a Discord or a Facebook group, you're going to know how many people always constantly ask how to make your own Mandrakes, and there's an answer for it now. The official Mandrakes are coming out in plastic, and it's very, very exciting. It's the first Dark Elder Infantry sets of 2019, and there is a plethora of options in there. Lots of nice options to make Night Fiends look awesome. There's also a new option there called a Shade Weaver, which borrows design cues from the Kaenite Shadowstalkers, and there's also a few Claves in there, which is quite interesting. But guys, this is so exciting. George, you're a massive Mandrake fan.
Huge Mandrake fan. I absolutely love these guys. And yeah, it's really nice to see some different options and different weapons and different loadouts while still keeping the same aesthetic that we fell in love with, of this kind of dark shinobi warrior coming from the shadows. And I think they're amazing. I can't wait to get my hands on them. My only critique is that I've only just finished converting my own from the Kaenite Shadowstalker models, and I don't know what to do with them now. Maybe I'll give them away in a competition or something. If any of you are interested, just let us know in the Discord if you want me to put them up. I can do a painting competition, and you can have some very own Archon George custom Mandrakes, because I'm going to want 30 of the official ones.
And that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm literally going to go out and buy 30. I am so hyped. And like you, man, I was starting to convert my own. I started making like Corsair Ghost Walkers, like some Ranger sort of style ones. And then as soon as the news of the Mandrakes came out, I was like, nah, just got to do the Mandrakes. They're absolutely wicked. Dom, you're a lover of the new Mandrakes as well?
Yeah, absolutely love the new models. I think they're really doing justice as well. As I was hoping they wouldn't just be the exact same models, but you know, plastic. So I just think they've done such a good job, and they've really, really, really done justice for me as well, because I'm a Night Lords like army collector, and having the Night Lords box with Mandrakes, fantastic. And I'll probably get the Night Lords boys off YouTube as well. So I'm already loving this new Night Lords Legion I'm going to be getting.
Absolutely perfect. And there's loads of really cool bits in the Night Lords set, which I think you're probably going to want to use in your Drakari as well, to hang off raiders as grizzly trophies. There's a very nice cape there to make that new Archon you're going to be making, to do as Incubi, but we'll talk about that in a bit. George, as a painter, I think for me as well, this is really exciting, just to really sort of show off, like, you know, your ability to paint different like flayed skin. And obviously with all the sort of the runes on them, I'm quite looking forward to practicing a bit of OSL. Is there any sort of other like ways you make your unit stand out at all, or things you're looking forward to painting on them?
I think you're right. The Mandrakes are an absolute goldmine for OSL effects. I'm a big fan of, on Instagram, El Miniaturista, who's a Spanish painter, and he's just an absolute master of light play. I don't know how I do know how he does it, because he does his videos on them, so go and watch them. But trying to replicate that, I've been practicing, getting a little bit better. But I mean, the trick is with them, particularly with these Mandrakes, is you're going to be painting like the flame effects white. If you're lucky enough to have an airbrush, then use it to make a halo around the light source, or use a dry brush with a bit of white to fade in around it. And then fluorescent paints just do a lot of the work for you. If you can get hold of some decent fluorescent paints or fluorescent inks, and me in particular, I'm going to use the flame effects to kind of work as my squad markings. So I'll have like one squad that will have like pink flames, one squad that will have like orange, and one squad that will have like green or blue. And therefore, it's easy to visually see which squad is which on the table. But yeah, I mean, and because the Mandrake's skin is so dark, it adds even more emphasis to those OSL effects. So I think you just kind of have to go down that line, really.
That's it. I think white inks are really interesting. They're a very good way to be able to get some nice sort of glowing effects. And like you, George, I'll definitely be using the different glow colours to show the unit. But I'm looking at some conversions as well, and some different sort of almost, I guess, esoteric ways of painting them. I think you could do some very interesting things potentially with like Vanta Black, like Black 3.0, trying to make them as dark as possible. Maybe even like doing a grayscale, really sort of leaning into that sort of that shadow look.
Boy, that would look like one of those crazy old like Japanese samurai films, you know, the really old black and white. Like almost like it's in stop motion. I think that would be really sweet if you could pull it off. In fact, I'm going to call you out, Eric, if you're listening, which you probably are. Do that. You'd be amazing at doing a grayscale Mandrake. I want to see it. Challenge.
Well, right? Eric's a wicked painter, isn't he? I want to look at a few conversions as well. I think maybe making a decapitator would be quite fun. And also trying to sort of make the unit stand out. I think I would like to try to make a unit look a little bit like the original Mandrakes with the masks, but I'm not quite sure that'll take them too far away from the their stylings. But watch this space. We don't know when they're going to come out, but we're all going to be very excited to start working on them. And when they do drop in the next episode, we would like to do a bit of a retro review of their lore and their rules throughout the editions. Okay, we're going to talk about the data state changes to Drakari. So there were two big changes for us. So these are changes to the army rule. They work on the old detachment and the new one as well. And what happens is when you are enhanced, you get an extra pip of AP on your melee attack. So -1 AP. So all of your melee weapons without AP go to -1. Then -2 goes to -3, etc, etc. That is really, really exciting. We'll talk about that in a bit more detail in a second. And the other part is something which we all felt should happen since the index came out, where previously the Archon could only join Court of the Archon and Cavalier Warriors. Since they dot Incubi and Archon have been like bacon and eggs, they are a really important pair. And finally, the Archon can lead the Incubi again. So guys, let's talk from Dom. Do you want to talk from like a gameplay perspective? How big of a change is this for us?
Yeah, it's huge. Like lore-wise, it just doesn't make sense why they wouldn't be allowed to fight together. And since I've been collecting Drakari, it's always been like Draz goes in one squad, and then you know the Incubi go with the Archon in the other sense when we had the Gym Blades and all that sort of stuff. But like, oh my god, it's so good because the Archon has an inbuilt ability for reroll wounds, which the one thing that like Incubi lacked was because they gave them, because everything else went up in toughness, they didn't think to, you know, increase the strength of our weapons like in combat, because last year in ninth edition Incubi used to do all the heavy lifting in combat with like Draz and everything else, and when everything went up in toughness, we were just kind of left being like, well, why are we still strength 4? Like, it makes absolutely no sense. Like we just get plus on strength just because we got a big sword. No. Now this makes it a lot better. We get reroll wounds, and we'll touch on it a bit later, but it helps with our new detachment because we get some special abilities there. But it basically means that Archons can now join Incubi units. We can have 3 Archons, 3 and 3 Incubi units, and you're going to get reroll wounds, which brings up the efficiency of the Incubi so much because they don't have many attacks. They've only got 3. And this just basically completes the squad. It makes them from kind of not really playable to like, okay, these are pretty good now. They're a good trade piece. They're not broken. They're a good trade piece.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Dom. It puts Incubi back in the game because for the whole of 10th edition, they just haven't existed, really. They went from being a staple in pretty much every 9th edition Drakari list. Some would say they carried a lot of the weight in that list. And they're such iconic models, and it was so daft that the Archon couldn't join them, because it's literally been their whole point, like all the way back since Drakari first came into being back in 3rd edition. It's always been Archon and Incubi. There was even two special Incubi models that came on the Dais of Destruction with Lord Vect himself. Like, it's literally always been their point. So thankfully GW have done it. From a lore point of view, I couldn't be happier. And also from a gameplay point of view, it's great, because Archon and Incubi is actually a decent punching unit now, a decent trade piece. And it gives you an excuse to put those models on the board. So really, really happy about that. And so we're going to talk about it a little bit more in a bit. Especially with the new detachment.
Yeah, and a fantastic kit as well, especially if you are a new Drakari player. If you bought the Start Collecting set, you likely would have a unit of Incubi as well, who competitively have been in the shadows, but they're definitely back, and it's very exciting to see. Alongside the balanced data slate, the Monitorum Field Manual drops. So what happens with this is it changes the different points across the game. You will see points drops and some points increases, and we saw quite a few points drops for the Drakari, which is really good. It breathes life into certain units. I think a few of them probably still not quite enough, but we'll go for that in a second. So points drops were for Drazar, Grotesques, Hellions, Incubi, Raider, Reavers, Succubus, Talos and Venom, and we had one points increase, which is a little strange. I don't think it's really set in the competitive scene alight. But the Void Raven Bomber, everyone's favourite centrepiece, went up in points. Guys, what is your reaction to this? G, take us away.
I first of all like to make a public apology to the Drakari community. I feel like the unnecessary point increase to Void Raven Bombers is purely because of the work that myself, Sky Serpent and Skari have done by taking them to tournaments and doing mediocrely well.
It 100% was you guys. Literally, there's no one else was running them, and it was just the three best Archon players were just like, okay, we'll just take this one model. We're not like doing three of them. And now, like the people who now are looking at all the games of all of the Drakari players that are doing well, what's the one thing that's they've all got on the list? They've got a Void Raven Bomber. So well done, you guys.
Yeah, sorry about that, but I mean, they're still good, and 215 points for a flyer is actually not that bad. There's a lot worse out there. Friend of the show, best mate Paddy, constantly reminds me how expensive his Tyranid flyers are, so it's still good, and in the new detachment is actually even better because of the strats for it, but again, we can talk about that later. It's just a shame, but the point reductions are really good, because they're basically on the core of most lists have gone down. So things like our transports are obviously the core for most Drakari armies, and even more so for this new detachment. So for both of those to go down 10 points, like Grotesques to go down is really good. Incubi to go down just as they've got this boost of being able to join by Archons. Really, really nice. I think it's nice to be on the receiving end of the infamous GW triple buff.
So let's talk about some of our darlings of 9th edition, who this edition of 40k haven't seen the battlefield much, and I still don't think they're going to. The Hellions, obviously the new detachment we're going to talk about in a minute, is transports the army, and Hellions don't really sort of benefit from much of it at all. They're going to get the extra AP, which is nice. But even with the points drops, do you see them being taken whatsoever still?
Absolutely not. They don't have the infantry keyword. They are useless.
Unfortunately, I have to second my friend Dom. It's just the mounted and the changes to fly just make Hellions really tough to put in a list when there are better options out there.
I agree. I think literally going to infantry would probably make them viable, unless a Witch Cult detachment, which you assume would come eventually to Codex. When that happens, I think they might be viable again, but at the moment, especially with Incubi being back, that damage too into Marines, I just don't think you're going to see them at all. But I've always noticed some very, very nice points drops. I think my list went down 30, because obviously the Bomber then obviously brought it back up, but it's especially with Raiders and Venoms going down, it's very, very good. What about Grotesques, guys?
Well, my Drakari list went up 2,000 points. So I'm I'm ready to bring it out. But
you're obviously running all the broken stuff, mate. You've got like what was that? That's like 20 Void Raven bombers, is it, or something?
But the Grotesques, I actually think they're at a good spot at the moment. I think it's going to take some play to really understand like the best way to deliver them. It's interesting that they are capacity 3 in a vehicle. I think 2 would actually make them playable in the game, and you would actually be like, do I take Grotesque or do I take Incubi sort of thing. But I think they're probably still best on foot, and I don't think a raid is really the answer for them. Maybe a Tantalus, that could be good, but there's other things that are good in that. So I think it definitely helps that they have the little buff, the little points decrease is nice, and especially with the extra pip of AP, it 100% helps. So if you like playing Grotesque, like I know like one of my friends Max, he loves Grotesques, and I do too. I've got loads of them. I do think that they're now viable. They're really viable.
Yeah, I agree with John. I think that points drops is good. Like 5 points a model dropping was necessary. I'm looking at Grotesques, to be honest, for my competitive lists with the new detachment in particular. I think they're unorthodox, and I think they'll catch people out, to be honest. So I'm looking forward to running them again.
There's also efficiency, isn't there, with them, with the new detachment rule, which we'll get onto in a minute. The ability to be good at shooting and combat goes hand in hand, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, me and you were talking about this on Tuesday, weren't we? How the new detachment, and we'll go into it, like with the new, that efficiency is the key word. Like, you really need to get the most out of this new detachment. It's so easy to fall into the temptation of, I can empower all my units and get 4 rerolls on 30 incubi and make my witches do loads of crazy stuff. And you're going to run out of resources so fast in this new detachment. You really need to be economic with your choices at the list construction stage, because it's so tempting to fill your list. And because of the point reductions, you can fill your list with all the juicy stuff that gets all the rerolls and all the damage numbers. But I guarantee you will run out of resources by turn 2 or 3. And after you run out of resources, the army does not do much. I think Grotesques are in a solid place, much better than they were before, which is great, because internal balance is really important for faction, because it gives us options to play other things. So really looking forward to seeing what they can do.
Okay, so let's dive straight into the new detachment. So it's called Sky Splinter Assault, or as I like to call it, Sky Serpent Assault. The detachment rule is called Reign of Cruelty. So each time a Drakkar unit from your army disembarks from a transport until the end of the turn, that unit's ranged weapons have the Ignores cover ability, and that unit's melee weapons have the Lance ability. If you're not aware of what Lance is, it means +1 to wound, which is only in melee. This is good. Very, very good. But again, there's so much to talk about in a roundabout way, where you need is efficiency, right? So straight away, let's compare it to Real Space Raiders, in that it's the only detachment that we have, and we're used to having pain tokens. So we're used to starting with the 3+, normally about sort of 2, if you're taking an Archon and a Succubus or a Homunculus, maybe start with 6. And most of the time you take an Art of Pain, so you get an extra 1 every single turn, whereas you don't have that in this detachment. And I think that's worth talking about off the bat. But at the same time, this is exciting when you consider previously the detachment rule didn't really give like any bonuses to the rules of the army, whereas now it's I think it's really exciting, and it means all your the melee, so that means all your witches are +1 to wound. So the ones with Lilith for strength 4 +1 to wound, they're winning Marines and Freeze all of a sudden. Your incubi, which are now of your Archon, they're strength 4 but +1 to wound. There is a lot of play there, and especially with Ignores cover, we know in 10th edition that everyone's always in cover, so having that is really handy.
Yeah, I think it's really good. It's nice to have a detachment ability that lasts after the beginning of the game, because the Real Space Raiders, whilst having extra pain tokens, it's nice. Like, you can start off with a maximum of 6. It's great, gives you that early game alpha capability, but to have an ability that works ideally throughout the game, as long as you're using your transports well, getting a bonus is really nice. And Lance is so important on our melee units, because all our melee units are very low strength comparatively to some other units that are in the game that are really punching hard. I'm looking at you, Exalted Eightbound. But yeah, and the Ignores cover is huge, massive, because we, generally speaking, all our guns are very low AP, apart from Dark Lances. So having Ignores cover really helps you root out those chaff units, and even do work against some Marines tucked in ruins and stuff like that. So yeah, really, really nice rule.
Yeah, I also agree. I think it's like one of the best attachments in the game. I think it's proper good. It's just I still worry that we're just too frail to kind of use this properly, and I think the only saving grace we have with this detachment ability is that we have a Venom, and the Venoms have an insanely good rule where if you can basically get back in your vehicle during the turn, so you can basically jump out, shoot all your guns, like rack shoot all of the guns, then now they get a pip of AP in combat as well, then they kill a unit and then jump back in. So they're incredibly good at trading, and I think that's really important to keep you alive, because if you can't do that, you're just gonna be stuck in the open. Like when I was watching shout out to Skari, I was watching his battle report the other day where he basically took six Venoms, and he was jumping out, jumping in, jumping out, jumping in. But then when a few of his vehicles died, he was just in the open and just got hosed down. So it was interesting to see. But I think Venom spam is kind of like a good place to start if you're looking at this detachment, rather than just going for the big squads. I think this is the MSU detachment, not the everything's in Raiders, because you need that ability to jump back in transports. And especially with the change now in the latest data slate, it's not just one unit, one model has to be within so many inches to get in the transport. It's three models that have to be close by, then you can get back in the transport. So it requires you to be way more MSU as well to abuse the detachment rules. But I love it. I think it's great. It's going back to the way I first played Jukari, which was when it was Dark Technomancers in 8th edition. I think it was 8th edition, where they had the... Yeah, it was 8th edition. And it was amazing, because you just ran Venoms and Racks and with Flamers and that sort of stuff. So it was really fun. But this is going to be really, really good. And I think it's my advice for people listening. I definitely would go down that route, what I've just been talking, rather than the big squad routes. Big squads are great, but there might be other vehicles for it.
It's really exciting, and it feels very, very Drakari. Obviously, it's extremely transport heavy. And I think in terms of, you know, when the Codex eventually comes out, having six attachments, I think we always assumed one like this would happen. But again, it's really nice that, you know, we're the first army, the first index to receive another detachment as well. And again, you know, with us being, you know, previously being the worst army in the game, improving the player experience, I think is a very important saying. And I think this definitely does improve that experience, because there is multiple ways of playing the army. I think a lot of army lists might feel a bit similar. I think you're going to see a few sort of typical combos, but we definitely do have a few tricks up our sleeve that we're going to talk about later. Let's go through. So the enhancements, we're going to start off with Phantasmal Smoke. So Phantasmal Smoke is for a Drakari model only. While the bearer's unit is wholly within 6 inches of a friendly Drakari transport, models in the bearer's unit have the benefit of cover and the stealth ability. So it's also important to note that you do not get the stratagems from Real Space Raiders. So we do not have the -1 ability anymore. We don't have that. We don't have Fire and Fade. So having stealth is that ability to get -1 onto units which wouldn't be able to get it otherwise. This is interesting. Like, Dom, we've looked at a few different ideas. I know there's one idea about even being able to give it to Beast Pack. Obviously, I know that their footprint's quite big. But do you think this is a good enhancement? Would you be looking to take it on your characters at all?
It's a good enhancement for if you're doing like Bricks of Incubi, because it the benefit, like having the stealth ability and the benefit of cover in the open. It, let's say you've just like smashed up a unit and now you're sitting there ready to get shot. It's gonna help. It's really gonna help because now you're giving cover to the incubi. You're also getting stealth, so they're making that like a bit more durable, which is really good. It's not an auto take, but I think if you're going down the bigger squads routes, I think it's really, really, really good. I think you're going to see a bit more survivability in this, because I know a lot of guard players use Kazakin as their like durability units, other than the Bulgrins, because they have a better save than the rest of their units, and then they can essentially have cover like this as well, and there's way around it. So from talking to various like competitive players about they're using Kazakin, I can see this would be a very good use of making at least one more unit of Incubi a bit more survivable if you are going for the bricks.
I think it's like Dom said, it's good but not an auto include. I actually think its best use is on Court of the Archon, to be honest, because if you're using Court of the Archon, you're going to be like with Carbolite Warriors. Like if you split the Carbolite Warriors in between a Venom and a Raider, so you have like the Court and the Archon and like your heavy guns in a Raider, and then have the small like splinter rifles in a Venom just off doing objective stuff, being able to like pop out of like the Raider, shoot with your ignores cover, getting full rerolls from the Archon, and then because you're within 6 inches of the transport, your survivability against return fire is a lot better because the Court have an inbuilt -1 to wound because of the Slith. So now you're all of a sudden you're -1 to hit, -1 to wound, and have cover even in the open. And obviously all the Court and the Carbolites have an inherent 4+ armor save, so most of the time you're going to be getting a 3+ save against AP0 stuff. So pretty good. I mean, the main risk of it is as soon as your transport dies, it gives you nothing, and transports are notoriously easy to kill. It's good, but not an auto include.
I agree. Words out of my mouth, especially the Court as well. I think I will likely continue still running a Court potentially on foot as well still. So it is certainly interesting, and it's not bad. You know, compared to the previous detachment, we didn't have many great enhancements. Let's move on to Sadistic Fulcrum. I know Dom was chatting to you and you're saying how amazing like all the names of like the enhancements and strats are. Like GW done a really, really good job with that. So this is a 4-age requiring model only. Each time you expend a pain token to empower the bearer's unit in the choosing phase, you can select one friendly Drakari unit within 3 inches of the bearer's unit until the end of the phase that transport is empowered. George, how would you take advantage of this enhancement?
For me, Tantalus Party Bus is the way to go for this, but in general it's actually pretty good on a few things really. I mean, it's really good for having on like typically on your Archon if you're running like a lot of Raiders filled with Warriors, for instance, being able to get like your Archon out and empower his unit and then pick a Raider full of other Carbolite Warriors. If it's within 3 inches, that's obviously, you can get a lot of efficiency out of your pain tokens that way, but having full rerolls to hit on 2 units of Carbolites is really good. For me, like my favorite way is going to be the Tantalus Party Bus, which we'll talk about either later or in another episode. But it's basically, the idea is again with a Court, and you have a full unit of Carbolite Warriors, your Archon, your Court of the Archon, in a Tantalus, because it's transport capacity 16, you get them out, you empower them to give them full rerolls to hit and wound, and then you pick the Tantalus as your transport that's within 3, and so the Tantalus gets full rerolls to hit as well with all of its pulse disintegrator cannons, so which is very efficient. So I'm really looking forward to using it, plus Tantalus is a cool, although a bit of a nuisance to put together, let's say.
You remind me of Doctor Who there for a second, where it's just like, bow ties are cool. Tantalus is a cool.
Bow ties are cool. So is a Fez.
Okay, let's move on to Spiteful Raider. So again, it is for Drakari model only. Each time the bearer's unit destroys an enemy unit in a fight phase, If that enemy unit is within range of one or more objective markers, when the bearer's unit was selected to fight, you gain one additional pain token. This is nice. This is 10 points as well. It's worth saying that, because I think a lot of times in 10th, you'll write lists which are like 1990 or 1980. This is a very nice relic. Dom, you're looking at this, aren't you?
Yeah, I think it's the one that's the most auto-include. Well, there's two that stand out. We haven't said the other one yet. So out of the three that we've said so far, this is the most auto-include out of them all, because it just... like with the pain with trying to get efficiency in pain tokens, this one is like the main one, and this is the one you really want to go off. Like if this guy dies, it's a bit annoying. So he'll be like your lieutenant, where you kind of, he does a bit of mop up duty. But yeah, I think it's really good, really really strong. I think this one and the next one are going to be in all your lists.
George, Spiteful Raider, is there anyone in particular you put it on?
Typically, Archon and Incubi, like Archon and a 5-man Incubi squad, are excellent objective trade pieces. And pretty much, if you've got a pain token in the pool, you're pretty much guaranteed to kill any kind of like little 5-man, I'm holding an objective kind of unit, which is an easy 2 pain tokens back again. So yeah, I for me, like, yeah, Archon on an Incubi squad, I think this is a really good shout for. I also look at it for Succubus and Witches. If you're running like 10 Witches and a Succubus, a little 10 point upgrade of this is quite good. They're actually surprisingly good at picking up chaff now with Lance. So if you have 10 points spare, this is pretty much an auto take, really, because there's no real downside to it. Like, so yeah, really good enhancement.
My final thought on that is, I wouldn't build for it, but if you have that 10 points spare, it is just an auto-include, isn't it? Like, but if you were umming and ahhing about whether you were 10 points over, but you had to swap to be 10 points under to get this, I wouldn't sort of worry about it. But it's really powerful in the right circumstance. And
just to button in there, I think especially with like the way the Jakari points are kind of placed, like when I've been, because I've been jumping around armies for a bit, I'm now coming back and I'm trying to figure out what I want in armies. I'm always finding like 20 or 15 points like spare right at the end. So for me, I'm always being like, just add it. I can't be bothered to like switch stuff around. It's good. It's going to come up in the games. It will, basically that will affect the games without even trying to build it in.
Definitely. It has value and it adds efficiency, especially around pain tokens. And let's talk about the fourth enhancement, which is called the Nightmare Shroud. So, Drakari model only. Each time the bearer's unit disembarks from a transport until the end of the turn, enemy units cannot use the Fire Overwatch stratagem to shoot at the bearer's unit. This is going to be seen in every single Drakari armament whilst this attachment is in vogue. It's really powerful. It's really nice to have some Ignores Overwatch back, especially with Overwatch as being the bane of Drakari. Dom, you love this relic.
Have fun with your Land Raiders sitting on that middle objective, ready to overwatch everything. It's gonna die. I'm gonna shove 10 Incubi right down your neck. This is fantastic, and especially with the amount of volatile overwatch that's going on at the moment, like with Forge Fiends, with Land Raiders, with Aggressors, just horrendous amount of output that's going out there. It's incredible to have the Vexator Mask back. Let's call it what it is. It is the Vexator Mask.
I agree. It's this is probably the auto include in every list that runs a Sky Splinter Assault detachment. It's Overwatch is the bane of Drakari existence in 10th edition. It's the most oppressive strat ever. I absolutely despise it. And since the change where we can't increase its CP cost anymore because it's not a battle tactic, we have no defense against it until now. So yeah, put this on a unit that you really want to get in your opponent's face, and it's going to stop them from being shot. I mean, from my perspective, yeah, the obvious one is Incubi to keep them safe. I think for me, I would be more inclined to put them on a witch unit, just because witches are so fragile to literally any over, even just standard overwatch of like bolters, they will die, let alone like dedicated overwatch units like flamers and stuff. So yeah, really, really good. Auto include, because this list, you're going to be running melee units. One of your characters will have this on it.
Awesome to see. So let's move on to the stratagems. The first thing to note is they are all one CP. And the other thing to note is they are all really good. Some of them you're going to want to be using every single turn. And so there's going to be some real efficiency here using your command points. So let's start off with Vicious Blaze. It is a strategic ploy stratagem using the fight phase just after a Drakari transport from your army has selected its targets. After your transport is fought, select one enemy unit that was the target of one or more of those attacks and roll 1d6 for each model embarked from your transport, adding one to the result if that embarked model is a Rax model. For each 5+, that enemy unit suffers one mortal wound to a max of 6 mortal wounds. It's like a little mini sort of tank shock after your tank shocked. And it's also important to note, you can use this in your opponent's fight phase as well if you were to survive in a transport. Dom, what's your thoughts on this, sir?
Yeah, it's just a double tank shot, which is fantastic. And then obviously you can do a bit more with other vehicles, which someone else will talk about. But this is great. It's just like, if you need, let's say you're going up against something really tough and you generally just don't have the models left on the board that can, you know, deal with that. You're like, right, let's load up some racks in a raider and then just let's tank shock. And then let's also vicious blades, because I need just to get 6 more wounds through. I think that's great. I think it's great. You spend your TCP, tank shock, vicious blades, and then it makes life a bit easier, you know?
I think it's great. First of all, isn't it nice that the guys inside transports can now actually hit things with their sharp knives that they carry all the time? Like, I always felt like it was a bit of a misstep by GW that our open top transports couldn't fight outside. Like, it's the same with orcs. Like, their trucks, like, I'm sorry, what universe do we live in where you're going to stop an orc from lobbing his chopper at you when you're trying to hack his vehicle apart? Like, he's going to be proper across with that, and I think our guys are the same. So yeah, this one is really nice. I think the nuance to it is the fact that, like Sky said, like, you can use it in your opponent's fight phase. So if your transport gets charged, typically your opponent charges your transport not to kill it, but just to OC you off that objective,
or to tag it, George. Like, they tag it so then it can't shoot next turn.
Yeah, or to tag it. So, like, the fact that, and yeah, I mean, in with the OC one, obviously our transports are only OC2 really, so it doesn't take much to out OC you on an objective. But with this in your back pocket, if they're charging you with something relatively simple, like a one wounded, I don't know, like a little 5-man sisters squad or something.
Or an assassin.
This gives you a good chance to either knock a few out or kill it outright. So that play just doesn't work. So suddenly, even though they had no intention of killing the transport, they just wanted to tie it up, or they just wanted to be on the objective and use you as a charge dummy. This gives you a way to stop that and to prevent and to keep hold of that objective, which is typically something Drakari really struggle to do. So yeah, really great strat.
I don't think it's necessarily one which you're going to build for, but this is one of those sort of strats which you're going to have in your back pocket, and maybe not 1 in 10, but maybe 1 in 20 games, like, out of nowhere, it could potentially win you that game.
I'm going to build for it, mate. I'm going to do Tantalus Rack Party Bus. I'm going to have 15 racks in my Tantalus and an Homunculus, just jiving it out, and I'm going to triple tank shock units. I'm going to charge in. My Tantalus is going to do mortal wounds on the charge. Then I'm going to tank shock you and do more mortal wounds. And I'm going to vicious blade you and do more mortal wounds with that. So I think it caps out at 18. But one of these days, I'm going to do 18 mortal wounds. One of them.
Absolutely love it. Okay, we're getting on to this stage where we've got 5 strats to go. And we're going to gush about every single strat, because they're all absolutely insane and the most exciting part of this attachment. So let's talk about Wraith-like Retreat. So it is a strategic ploy. Use it at the end of the fight phase and you target one of your Drakari infantry units from your army that has fought this phase. Your unit can make a normal or fallback move, but unless it is a witch's unit, it must end that move wholly within 3 inches horizontally and 5 inches vertically of a friendly Drakari transport and must embark within that transport at the end of that move. Now, we lost Fire and Fade, but for me, this is absolutely massive. So taking, it just means your witches can be dancing around objectives. Like, I was really worried about losing Fire and Fade, about the ability to, like, move quickly across the board to take objectives. Whereas this one, You know, you're going to be able to move 14, you're going to get out 3 inches, you're going to charge something, and at the end of the turn, you're going to just, you know, yeet sort of 8 inches of your witches onto another objective. Or they're going to go charge, you know, a tank, which is, you know, the single whirlwind, which is like, you know, sat near the opponent's objective but not on it, so it can't get tagged, and you fall onto it. So actually, I'm going to tag you, let's move 8 inches onto it. This is really powerful, and especially in terms of raiders, it means you can get sort of pseudo venom sort of, you know, going back into a transport. It's also important to note that you can use it with a fallback move as well, so you can't get, you know, sort of tri-pointed. I think this is absolutely huge. You've got a lot of play, George, as a, you know, what we would like to say, we're, you know, we know our Drakari well, we know our finesse play well, but it's one of your favorite play styles, and you must be really excited about this.
Mate, I've been waiting for a strat like this since stratagems became a thing. This is basically our version of the Tyranid stratagem called Overrun, which was always one of my favorite stratagems, just being able to move after you've fought or after you've been attacked. Particularly with the witches, being able to move in any direction is amazing. But being able to embark back on your transport is huge. So like you said, even, and particularly with the detachment rule of when they come out of transports, you get your bonuses like lance and things like that. So say you get charged in your opponent's turn, it doesn't go well for you, but a couple of guys do survive, then you can jump back into your transport free for then in your turn you can come out and do whatever you want to do. For me, this combos so nicely with witches and venoms, particularly like a five-man witch with a succubus or preferably Lelith, because if you activate it in your turn, because this is end of the fight phase and the venom's ability is end of the fight phase, you pick the sequencing, so you can make a normal move with the witches after they fought of 8 inches, and as long as they end that move wholly within 6 inches of the venom picks them up again, which means you can move your witches like up to 14 inches away from your venom, and for one CP you can get them back in the venom at the end of your turn. It's huge. It's absolutely huge, for particularly for like mission play. You can have your venom placed behind a wall with Lelith and five girls inside, and every turn you can jump them onto that objective, chop up whatever's there, one CP, jump back in the venom, do it again the next turn. I cannot wait. And plus, the name is awesome. Wraith-like Retreat. Hello, that's sexy as hell.
I really like this because it's really, really good for being a little bit cheeky, that if you survive an assault from someone, you can basically in the fight phase be like, cool, so there's no one on that objective over there, so I'm just going to go over there now and score primary, and suddenly from out of nowhere you've just got an extra 5 points on, in that turn. So I think it's really good for that tactic, and George covered everything else. I think it's solid. I think this is going to be used a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing it's really good for, again with witches, is it's really useful for getting around enemy screens. So if your opponent's savvy and screened out an objective with a line of chaff to hopefully soak up your charge, you'll be like, fine, I'll charge you. If I kill you, I kill you. If I don't, I don't. But after that, I'm now going to use my normal move to go onto the objective that you screened me off with my OC2 witches. They'll die next turn, but if you can deny primary for a turn, which is like 90% of the game with Drakari in 10th edition, yeah, really, really good stratagem. I'm probably going to be using this every single turn, like, pretty much. But then the other stratagems are really good. So take us through those, Sky.
Yeah, again, I think you can use this every turn. And I think what it reminds me of is a term I like to call like a legal gotcha, where you're going to explain to your opponent all these stratagems. You're not going to catch them unaware. You're not going to not explain this. But people just won't be able to, unless they've really experienced this, they're not going to be able to perceive it operating on a battlefield, especially whilst the detachment is new. So again, it's really exciting, and there's so many other good strats. So let's go into Skyborne Annihilation. Use this in the shooting phase. You target one Drakari unit from your army that has disembarked from a transport this turn, is not ready to shoot yet. The effect is, until the end of the phase, ranged weapons equipped by models in your unit have the sustained hits 1 ability, which is exploding hits, or the sustained hits 2 instead if they are Cavalite Warriors units. Again, this is awesome, and there are lots and lots of different ways you're going to use this. Dom, which ways would you use this, my friend?
This is a cheeky one, isn't it? I really like this. When I read it, I was like, okay, sustained hits, one, nice, nice. Cabalite Warriors, well, they're going to be the ones that are going to be shooting anyway, so this is fantastic. So they're already jumping out of the transport, and then they're going to ignore cover. Fantastic. Now you probably get lucky, like, two or three times in the game with a double Dark Lance hit. Yeah, yeah, this is sick. I really love this because we're all about jumping in and out of transport. So if you've got the CP, you can 100% make this work. So
to quote Manny Chima, mate, it's just roll sixes, bro.
Just roll sixes, bro. I'll get my Manny sixes, dice. But yeah, it's literally just like it's just what we need. It just brings up for one CP just the efficiency. I think if this was in any other army, I think this might be a 2 CP strat because they have a bit more efficiency with their infantry shots. So sustained hits 2 is just fantastic. I think you're going to take at least one Cabalite Warrior unit and then they're going to absolutely blap someone and then they'll probably die the next turn. But no, this is great. I really like this.
I was talking to Rob from 6++. I'll credit him with this idea, but he was looking at whether you actually take 10 Mandrakes that come out of a Raider and you're getting sustained hits 1 with obviously some devastating wound attacks, which is interesting. You're going to see Archons with Court still. You're going to see them with Incubi a lot. But I think there is something to be said for maybe an Archon with 10 Cabalite Warriors. I think you can put a lot of firepower out, especially jumping out of a Raider. This is really good. And there's probably a way you can amp it up a bit, G, right?
Tantalus Party Bus! Right, so yeah, going back to the same unit. 10 Carbolites, 4 Court, Archon. Come out of the Tantalus, empower both units. You get sustained hits 2 on the whole unit, including the court. I know they've only got like 3 shard carbine shots, but it's still another few splinters. And 4 rerolls to hit and wound. And logically, I don't see a reason not to fish for 6s, really, because if you're rerolling all your hits, just pick up anything that's not a 6. Roll them again, you're still hitting on 3s, which is still very good. Yeah, can't wait. I mean, the efficiency on that is crazy high because you're for 1 CP and 1 pain token, you've got an entire Carbolite Warrior squad with sustained hits 2, full rerolls to hit and wound, ignores cover, and a Tantalus shooting with full rerolls to hit for 1 CP and 1 pain token. Like, I absolutely love it.
It's crazy. It's crazy good. Let's move on. Let's go to Pounce on the Prey. Finally, we're again, like, these strats are all so, so good. This is a strategic ploy. Use it in your movement phase. Just after a Drakari infantry unit from your army disembarks from a transport that made a normal move this phase, you target that infantry unit, and until the end of the turn, your unit is eligible to declare a charge. Raider Rush is back. You can finally move 14, get out with your Incubi Brick or your Witches or whoever, and declare a charge. This is massive. Dom, you're excited for this.
Oh, yes, I am. I am very excited about this. It's just so good. Like, to be able to just, like, be just to use the movement of my vehicle to then jump out and then go, right, I'm going to go another 12 inches. If I have another CP, maybe I'll kill a unit and then, you know, because I wish you, good thing about it, which is you move your Raider up, they jump out, they charge, they kill the unit, and then they go take it. Capture enemy outpost turn 1. It's awesome. Like, if you've got the CP, like, you can, if you got, all you need is 2 CP and 1 pain token, and you can effectively just get capture enemy outpost anytime with just this one unit of witches, which is staying behind a obscuring ruin waiting for that card to come up. I think it's immense. Like, it's not broken, it's just the movement we have all been missing, you know.
Yeah, exactly what Dom said, mate. This is absolutely huge. I was so disappointed when Raiders didn't come with the assault vehicle rule, but it's so powerful that I can understand it not having that. Obviously, they want to limit that kind of power to, like, things like Land Raiders and stuff, but having this as a strat, it just changes. It changes the threat mechanics to the whole army, and your opponent has to really think about, right, at any point, My opponent can just go 1 CP, I'm moving 14 inches, and you've essentially got, like, a unit that's got a 24-inch average threat range, is it? So it's 14 plus 3, so 17 plus 7 average, so yeah, 23-inch average threat range.
which yeah, is but huge. Then on top of that, George, you've got the pile-in consolidates. That's six. Yeah, yeah. And then you've also got the strat if you've got one CP for another eight. Yeah. So what's that? 36?
Yeah, 30.
It picks up by the venom another six as well.
Yeah, it's huge. So like for things like that are typically like capture enemy outposts, most players don't think about it. They don't think about screening for it. They just normally have some sort of cheap chaff unit on there to hold it just to get primary and think nothing of it. They just think, all right, as long as I screen out deep strikers, no one's capturing this. No, this will get it, like, every game for one CP.
It kind of makes me think that witches might, just one unit of witches might be an auto-include just for the, with a raider.
Yeah, mate.
Just for this trick.
At least one unit of witches now.
Yeah, I don't even think in a raider. I think, I personally would split a squad of witches between two venoms, have Lelith in one to do the whole, I'm going to just stay here and jump in and out every turn. And then have one hidden somewhere just to do this when you need it. But also it's really good on like something again that I'm looking at is three grotesques in a raider can use this really well. And grotesques, even though they're only AC1, they're still reasonably tough, like four wounds each, T5, five up, feel no pain. They have fight on death as well on a four up, which is not bad. And obviously if they're coming out of the raider, they're going to get lance with their strength 5 attacks and AP with an extra AP if you empower them, they can do some work. Amazing strats, just like all of them really. I think that's the big problem with this detachment is all your strats are very good and you're going to want to use them, and we don't have a way to get CP other than discarding tactical objectives.
I've got a little thing here. So let's say you charge like your massive grotesque unit into a unit of, I don't know, charging into Judicia with a Lilith squad, and then behind them is, let's say, something that's really good in combat that's gonna kill you if you tag it. Lilith kills that chaff squad, then the unit then activates one CP and goes into activates and then tags another unit. That other unit then fights the grotesques. They died, but they haven't actually fought this turn, so they can still fight on death on a four up, right?
Yeah, perfectly fine.
So you could have
three grotesques in a raider, which takes up 9 slots, leaving you 2 slots in your raider to fit like Drazhar or Lelith in if you want to run them solo. Not a bad shout. Really to go back to the stratagem, it's amazing. You're not gonna use it every turn, but just to have that in your back pocket, knowing that you can do it if you do, like Dom said, that you draw the capture enemy outpost, I think this makes up for the fact that we lose fire and fade, which was typically what we used to do capture enemy outpost. You used to get your unit out, move your transport, get your unit out, shoot something innocuous, then 2 CP, move that unit again onto an objective. But we can do basically the same thing with a melee unit for 1 CP, and you're probably going to kill the thing you charge as well, if it's as long as it's not something really harsh, like, I don't know, Angron or something. really, really good strat.
Let's continue talking about really, really good strats. Sweep and Mockery is a strategic ploy stratagem. Use this in your opponent's movement phase just after an enemy unit has ended a normal move, advance, or fullback move. This is basically Phantasm. One Drakari transport from your army that is not within engagement range of one or more enemy units and is within 9 inches of the enemy units that ends that move, you then move the transport 6 inches. Again, I think we've all just wished we had this, and this is insane. You can use this for so, so much. Dom, what's one of your ideas?
So I just like the idea of our transports being fast, right? So I more want to comment on this rather than tactically. I just think it's just great, like, to have extra movement wherever we can, and just having this like Sweeping Mockery, I think it's just hilariously named as it is, and the description is great as well. The crew of the skimmer delight in the evading and taunting of their enemies with mocking ease. And I just think that's so genius, the way they've worded that. But the actual strat is just fantastic. Like you just said, after your opponent's movement phase, and Uni gets within 9, like, you just move 6 away. Like, it can get you primary, it can get you places to set up, like capture any outpost if you held it for a turn. It also protects your valuable units, because people are going to be wanting, like, to charge your 8-bound, charge with 8-bound into the raider just to pop it, to battle shock your incubi, then to maybe tag them afterwards. They're wanting to get all the juicy goodness that's inside these transports. This is a fantastically named stratagem, fantastically worded little description underneath. Also, it's the strat that everyone hates playing against with Space Marines and Necrons, and it's just absolutely fantastic. And I think this is incredible just to get extra movement, because it doesn't say that you need to move away. You can move towards, so you can actually just move block something. So if something gets within 6, you're like, okay, cool, I got fly, I'm gonna fly over you and move block that Lehman Rust behind you so it can't move anymore, and now can't get the angle on this unit that's on the objective down there.
Yeah, Dom said it, not quite as eloquently as he usually does, but yeah, the Swooping Mockery strat and the little flavor text, I absolutely love mocking it. I just picture the guys hanging off the side as the skimmer moves away, just giving the middle finger salute to the person that was trying to charge him. I think, yeah, absolutely great. Anything that's out of phase movement is exceptionally powerful in 40k. That's why Phantasm has been nerfed like twice now. And then just as GW nerfed Phantasm twice, we get it for exactly the same thing, but it's just for our transports, which is arguably better, arguably worse, depending on the situation. But yeah, you're gonna use this a lot. There's a lot of tactical play in it, which we can go to in another sort of episode. I think we should do like an episode of sort of tactical things you can use Drakari for. This one is, you're gonna have to learn to play with it, and very good players will use it very well and really scupper opponents. It's definitely a gotcha strat, but as long as you tell your opponent, look, I can do this, then he just has to prepare for it, the same as we have to when we're facing Aldari or any of the other gotcha strats that are out there, like the CSM Nurgle strat and stuff like that. So yeah, really, really good one.
It's also quite interesting as well in some respects. So if you do it quite cleverly and someone's just towing on to deny you primary, you then use it to basically, let's say it's like a Cabalites in a Venom or Raider. The Cabalites then, Raider then moves 6 out of line of sight. You regain the objective, but also what's hilarious is because in your command phase, if that Venom doesn't die, it's now sticky. It's especially huge in this, the wording of it as well, because it's when someone makes a fallback move and all that sort of stuff. Like if you're going against another Drakari player, right? And then they use the strat to do a normal move or fallback move, you just go, cool, I'm going to spend my CP and I'm going to sticky this objective.
I mean, the tech that I would typically use this for is like with the sticky objectives. If you've made an objective already sticky and your opponent moves up to try and take it off you by charging, say, your Venom, you can comfortably move your Venom off that objective, knowing that it's sticky, to make the charge impossible. So now the sticky objective is still yours. Your opponent's unit's left out in the open, unable to charge because it's out of range now, and it's still your objective.
Okay, and the final stratagem is Night Shield. Now, I reckon this can work on any vehicle, not just transports. So I reckon this is why the Void Raven went up. So you use this in your opponent's shooting phase just after an enemy unit has selected its targets. One Drakari vehicle unit from your army that was selected as a target of one or more of the attacking unit's attacks. Until the end of the phase, your unit has a 4-up invuln. This feels really clutch. You know, again, we don't have access to the -1 to hit strat, so this is your sort of saving grace of trying to keep alive that key vehicle. I think for me, the big thing to say is, I think this is an extremely good strat, and I love that we have it. But some of the others, I think you're going to use more. So this feels like, don't press that button unless you really need to. But gee, you're a big fan of this.
I mean, yeah, it's nice to have a defensive strat. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's the only strat in the detachment that doesn't involve the transport keyword.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, so all the others involve transports in some ways, but this one just says Drakari vehicle, which is anything. So I think for me, like most lists, you're going to be running like one or more Ravagers, which you would use this on. If you want to run Void Ravens, it's very good on that. For me, I'm looking at it for the Tantalus party bus, because the Tantalus is a big old boy. He cannot hide and he's not that hard to kill. So being able to get the Tantalus a 4+ invul for 1 CP is really nice. Again, it's one of those ones you don't want to use all the time. If you're playing Dark Elder, you need to get used to the fact that your things are going to die. If they get shot or charged, they're going to die. So spending resources on trying to keep them alive, only for them to die anyway, is how you lose games, basically. So you need to pick it at the right moment. You need to sort of do quick math in your head, like what's coming in, what can come in, can I survive it if I have a little bit better defenses? Then use it for that. So it's a good strat, and nice to have one defensive option rather than all offensive and shenanigans.
They're awesome. I was going to round out this section by asking you guys to do what I think is actually probably an impossible task, which is select your favorite strat, but they're all amazing, right? Wraith Flight Retreat is just so good. Pounce on the Prey, it's just so good. Sweep Mockery, like, I think it's the top three. They're probably the top three, but they're just incredible. And I guess I have to say, well done, GW. They're just very, very good. Really, really good.
I personally think the Swoop and Mockery is the best strat. I think it's the most, the one that we're all going to use the most for offensive and defensive purposes. Offensive being objective taking. But it's also good because if you're doing tactical and you know that you can get something later, you can basically be like, the move within six, great, I think I can move somewhere else. You can also bait it against orc matchups and to get like units in the open, because suddenly now I'm out of charge range. So I think it's really, really, really good. I would say just the other one to probably look at, they're all just so good, aren't they? It's probably just the Skyborne Annihilation. These warriors are all well versed in raining suppression fire on foe, even as they close with them from high, shredding defenses and leaving survivors easy prey for the raid. Oh, it's great.
What's your favourite, George?
I think Wraith-like Retreat. Just because of it, I've been waiting for a strat like that for ages. But from a purely gameplay point of view, the Swooping Mockery is amazing. It gives you so much tactical flexibility, and it gives you it, for defenses, it gives you a lot, because the whole thing about Jakari with defensive wise is don't be there. So if you have more ways to not be there, you're going to survive more. I really struggle not to quote the whole old Monty Python sketch of how not to be seen. That's the art of playing Jakari. Don't be seen. Don't be out there. Which is why armies strong in out of line of sight shooting typically wreck us. Really, really like that, I think. But as I said, they're all good, all well named. It's nice to have a set of stratagems you're actually going to use. I think that was the main weakness of the Real Space Raiders detachment, was the strats were okay, but they were really limited on who you could use it on. And it just didn't really do much. Like, I don't think I've ever used Alliance of Agony. Like, ever. It just never came up.
Anyone has?
No one has. It was Fire and Fade or Torturous Craft, like the minus one to wound on my Talos. Those were like the only two I used. And then it was just universal strats of like command, reroll, grenades, tank shock, things like that. So really nice to have a set of stratagems that you actually want to use and make your army work better, which is nice.
For me, the best thing about this is just how excited the Jakari player base is to use this. Like, it just feels like so Jakari. Like, Games Workshop have really, really done well with this. So we're all excited about the detachment, but something that is very, very clear is you're going to need a lot of pain tokens to make all your new sort of melee units work well. So I want to talk a little bit about pain token economy. I want to talk about two different categories. I want to talk about generation, i.e. units which have different ways of generating pain tokens, and also mitigation as well. So when I say mitigation, I mean sort of pseudo abilities, which are ways which sort of act like you have pain tokens as well. So the first thing in terms of generation I want to talk about broadly is your deadly units, your glass hammer units, your glass cannon units. So it's very important to remember that your hammer units are going to be leading the way to get your pain tokens. Your incubi, your 10 incubi of archons are going to be there to do that for you. Leather from Witches are going to do that for you, and also your Dark Light is going to do that. So it's important to remember to keep your key assets alive to be able to still kill the enemy to gain those pain tokens. Okay, so going through the different data sheets, the Chronos, everyone knows the Chronos very, very well, and I think in this detachment, to get your Scourges singing with their, you know, their BS4+, you want to be rerolling those hits. So obviously the Pain Parasite aura is very, very important. Going into one of my favorite units, the Court of the Archon, the Medusa, the Eye Burst, when that hits a unit, that forces a Battle Shock. So important to remember a Battle Shock, a failed Battle Shock generates a Pain Token for you. Drazhar with his Vicious Execution, he can generate either D3 or 3 Pain Tokens depending on the character he kills. If he kills the Warlord, he gets 3. It's really good. We'll talk about Drazhar a little bit later in the datasheet winners and losers, whether he's worth taking. The Homunculus, again, he has a -1 aura affecting Battle Shock. So again, if you can get some Battle Shocks going off, he's going to help you generate some more Pain Tokens. The Incubi as well, make people take a test with the Tormentors. Very, very important. You're going to see Incubi again. The Rax have Torturer's Craft. Now, Rax are a unit which I keep wanting to bring more of into my list because they generate them when they kill something, so you can use them to plink off that last wound on the unit. But they also importantly give you pain tokens when they die as well, which is awesome. Let's talk very briefly, obviously, about Spiteful Raider, which is a great enhancement, which again gets you pain tokens. And to dip into the Eldari Index to our allies as well, the Death Jester, when he kills a model with his shots, he will force a Battle Shock test, and the Void Weavers as well, when they hit a unit, they will force a Battle Shock test. So lots of different ways to generate pain tokens. And talking about mitigations, only a few on here, but it's important to note that the Ravager, with his Eradicate the Foe ability, that is reroll ones against units which are at full strength. That's important to note that it's almost like a Suedo pain token effect of the rerolls. There's Talos as well with the pain engine rule. When they kill a unit, they're going to be empowered for the rest of the game, so you don't have to even worry about pain tokens and mitigate it entirely. And also the Beastmaster has reroll charges as well, so you'd never be using a pain token on that, but it means that you still have the reroll abilities there as well. And also talking about Sadistic Fulcrum as well, which is essentially multiplying pain tokens. Guys, any sort of additional tips? Are you going to look to lean into ways of generating or mitigating pain tokens for your armies going forward with the new detachment?
No, I think you covered most of them. Like, I think, yeah, like, I was telling to Don before we started recording, I think 5-man racks are going to be quite useful in this new detachment, purely because they're our best kind of throw onto an objective unit. If they survive, great. If they don't, at least you get a pain token back. But yeah, really you need to start looking at units from a perspective of, like, do they need a pain token to work? So typically units like that you see in most Draconis, like Scourge, I think really need a pain token in order to work. Otherwise the Blizzard Skill 4 really starts to hurt them. Obviously you want your Incubi probably to be empowered every time you charge them, because they get the full rerolls with the Archon there, so they're going to be pain token hungry. I don't think Talos typically work well in this particular list, in this particular detachment, but they are a way of doing their thing. As long as you kill something cheap and cheerful early on in the game, then they just become empowered for the rest of the game. So that saves you pain tokens on them. So yeah, look for things within built rerolls like the Ravagers and stuff that don't necessarily need the pain tokens in order to work. And I think that's about it, really. There's not really a lot else. Like, Reaver jet bikes don't typically need pain tokens because they don't really do a lot. They're just kind of there to do missions and screen and move block and stuff if you use them in your list. So I think you covered all of them, Sky.
Yeah, no, I think you covered a lot of things. And I think we've done a good job of covering, basically, to kind of guide people in the correct direction. Because I think we also need to take a pinch of salt with all of this. Like, yes, like, it's going to be quite hard to get everything going all the time. So you're going to have to be really careful with your economy that you're going to be creating with CP and for your pain tokens. So I would suggest tactical objective play, even in the games that give you easier games with fixed, just because you need the CP economy and you need the pain token economy. So I think, yeah, just be careful of that. Make sure you build them in your list, like especially with the characters that we talked about earlier. I think it's really good, and with the enhancements that can give you an additional pain token and being able to kind of spend one pain token and then give someone else a buff as well. So bear that in mind. There's been a lot of games online that we've all seen. So we've got the Vanguard Tactics ones, we've got the where Box was playing, we've got Skari with his game, and the Art of War game where it was Jukari versus Tau, and everyone was in all of them were saying there's not enough pain tokens and there's not enough CP. So you just could be careful and just be smart with it, and don't just think it's a win now army just because it's brand spanking new. You're gonna have to play well. You are gonna get tabled in every single game pretty much, but you can win with just being an efficient general. I think there's no way better way of saying it. And especially like people think Drazhar is out of the game because he's not an Archon, he doesn't give reroll wounds, and what's the point in Drazhar actually being in with your incubi? The reason he goes in the list at the moment, I think, as well, is because he's got the access to free precision, and especially with the Necron Menace that's around at the moment, being able to freely precision a character out and reliably smash that character to pieces, I think is going to really help versus those Wraith lists and the Master of Execution lists in World Eaters, and also the Orc lists where they have the this list a few actually that will help. So the Orc list where they have the war bus with the boys that come out of the transports, and then also you've got the aggressors from Minus Calgrass. He is really valuable at his points to be able to go in seeking homing missile, take out the character, so then you don't have to spend other resources because he's quite efficient by himself to then deal with those problems.
Very well said, Dom. And that segues us nicely onto our next section, where we're going to talk about some data sheet winners and maybe some losers as well. So staying on the theme of the data slate and the detachment, we'll look at some of our units, which I think you're going to see a bit more on the battlefield. And I'm keen to talk about one of them, was it's going to involve a bit of a hobby discussion briefly as well. And that is everyone's favorite arrogant Archon. So the Archon is someone who slipped in and out of army lists in Real Space Raiders, especially when the Vect ability got nerfed. And I think you're going to see at least one Archon in every list now, maybe two. I think a lot of people are looking at three, and especially because of Incubi. I think Incubi have breathed massive life into the Archon. Guys, you're going to... I know, Dom, you keep asking me to convert you an Archon every single day, which is something which I will do for you, so do not worry. But there are lots and lots of ways to convert Archons. Now, we'll talk about purchasing a few. I know a lot of people do not like the original, the plastic one that you can buy at the moment, and I think he's fine personally, but if you don't like his pose, we all know the Dark Elder range is fantastic in the sense that you can use arms from across it, you can use witch arms, Kablite arms, anything you want, especially the Corsairs as well. Corsairs are a nice way. If you're not using Corsair Void Guard in your army, using the Felarch as the base for an Archon is a fantastic idea. And it also brings us onto a bit of a meme, a very well-known iconic conversion, which is called the Vizarchon. So taking the Vizarch from Yunari range and making him into an Archon, which looks fantastic. I've done it to make a Felarch for my Corsairs. I know lots and lots of people have used it to make their own Archons, which is fantastic. Going back to some older models, the Metal and Fine Cast Archon, which was available between 2010 and 2014, you can still find on eBay, sometimes at big prices, sometimes at reasonable ones, but that is a fantastic model. If you want to get a second Archon, that would be a really good go-to. And the OG Archon, the My Face is Your Face Archon, George, you got a fantastically painted one. That is available. I've always found it quite cheap on eBay if you search for it, and that makes a really, really nice model, really, really sort of pops on the table, especially with its sort of older aesthetics. There are so many different ways to convert Archons, so many different ways. You can dip into any Elf or Elves or Eldar range anywhere and build your own, and especially in AOS, even armies which aren't Elf, such as the Vampire Counts, the Grave Blight, Soul Blight Gravelords, that's their name, And everyone's favourite, the hottest conversion at the moment, is the Warhammer Plus Vampire. And you converted one yourself, George. That is a fantastic model.
Yeah, and super easy to convert, to be honest. I mean, where is she? She's in front of me here. Yeah, so, I mean, the armour, you don't really need to do anything on, but it already looks quite Jakari's, very jagged, very nice curves, pointy. You can literally just do you could just do a face swap, to be honest, like a helmet swap, and that would be fine. I did it with, I swapped her sword for a husk blade, and I swapped her other hand, which I think is holding a chalice normally, and I've changed it to a pistol, and then just added some gubbins onto her to make her look a bit more like she's set in the 41st millennium rather than Age of Sigmar, basically. So some grenades, some chains, a couple of knives, some broken soul stones, and yeah, really, really easy to convert, and you don't need to do anything with it, really. As I said, just a simple head swap would be absolutely fine.
Top tip, if you're taking an Age of Sigmar model, you want to make it a bit more sci-fi, add something a bit 40k to the base, add a Space Marine helmet or something like that. It really sort of helps to bring it into the setting. There's even more ways to make Archons. I've made one by using the small version of Morathi. That makes a very, very nice model. And you can also make one, like, you know, a cheap Archon out of a Cabalite Warrior, as long as you can, you know, sort of you know, pimp him out with a nice banner, maybe a cape. You know, let's look at the new Night Lord set from the Nightmare Kill Team box. That's got a really cool cape on the captain.
I think the hand of the Archon kit has got a lot of nice pieces. Like, that helmet is really nice, very, very reminiscent of the 5th edition Archon that everyone loves.
And Corsairs as well. They've got really nice armour.
Yeah, the Corsair kit is my favourite. And we haven't spoken about Corsairs in this episode, because there's nothing really to say. It feels like a bit of a missed opportunity. I do wonder whether, because the kit is so fantastic, whether it sells itself and it goes under the radar. But at the moment, there's no real good reason to bring Corsairs into a Drakari. And I do hope that happens in the future. But again, if you haven't heard me talk about it in any way before, the Corsair kit, if you can afford it, is absolutely phenomenal in terms of conversion pieces. There are some absolutely beautiful heads in there, which you can make your Cabalite Warrior stand out, use across your characters as well. And again, yeah, the hand of the Archon, even the witch style head is fantastic as well. Lots and lots of nice ways. A torso from the Arch Cyberite is great. There are just so many ways to make your Archon stand out. So again, if you want any more ideas, check on Instagram, search the hashtags for Archon as well. And again, we love to see your Archons as well. So when this episode has come out, please comment on our posts with pictures of your Archons.
Or feel free to join our Discord and ask us there. And people share pictures all the time. So there are hundreds of Archon conversions, and they're all good. There's so many options. It's crazy. You really don't have to just stick with the standard GW model. Like, you can pretty much, yeah. So there's so many options, and we always discuss them. It's the ongoing meme, isn't it, Sky? You must see all of them on being the monitor of the Facebook group. It just seems every day there's several posts of, is this an Archon? Is this an Archon?
Even the new, I think she's quite new at the moment, about to come out. The new vampire with the snake, like, you know.
Oh, the one that's standing on a snake.
She's not.
Yeah.
She's normal scale. She could be really cool. You can take your brain, you know, make her into your own Lady Malice, and just. All the other vampires, I think we spoke about the vampires from the Underworld set, the Crimson Court. They two of them make good Archons. Like, there's just infinite, you know, opportunities. And even
a lot of, like, the Aldari models, because from a lore perspective, like, Drakari are very fluid. Like, it's not like you're born a Dark Elder and you stay a Dark Elder. Like, it's not like the Pards in Eldar. Like, there are, like, multiple ways that you can become Drakari. Like, you're just part of the Aldari race. It just means that you've strayed away from the path, and now you're leaning into a bit more selfish torturous pleasures of the galaxy. Like, and there's no reason, lore-wise, that you couldn't have, like, a Farseer that just gets sick and tired of predicting everyone else's problems and goes, you know what, F this, I'm going to go to Kamora and see what I can do, and use my abilities surreptitiously to get an advantage over other Cabals. So you could grab your Aldari Farseer model, take the Ghost Helm off, put a Carvalite Warrior head on, ditch her witch staff and put a spear on or something, like whatever. Like, imagination is the key. There really is no rules for this.
Jean Silicott Magus, the female Magus, makes an amazing archon. Like, anything with a robe, just look at Necromunda. There are so many awesome models in that game. And again, Underworlds is fantastic. And going back to elves, like, I can't believe I haven't spoken about Idnif yet. Idnif Deepkin. I love their aesthetic, especially, like, you know, their big sort of horn sort of shoulders. They're very reminiscent of the old Dark Elder aesthetic. Lumineth Realm Lords, like, there's literally so many. And, you know, the Archon effectively represents you on the battlefield. So, like, for me, don't be scared about converting. Like, it's just so easy to kitbash. Like, once you, you know, you get an idea in your head, like a theme, and, like, you want to name your Archon, like, oh, man, I love converting Archons. It's just that. It's just a great hobby, and there's just so many ways you can do it. So again,
how many have you got, Paulie? I've got in my cabinet next to me. I've got five Archons next to me in my cabinet, and one that I'm currently painting. So it'll put me up to six.
God, but like, I need more. So convert
me some. Archon arms,
right? Yeah, they're
all mine are like the crappy Archons that you get. The crappy, like. On the side of Raiders, you get all of those weird poses. I've got them on, like, random rocks. Like,
yeah, but again, it's a great way of making cheap Archons. Like, you know, give them a cape, give them an interesting head, like, you know, just shove, like, a corset head in them, and straight away you've got, like, an interesting Archon.
I'll tell you what, Dom, after Warhammer World, I will kit bash you an Archon and paint it for you.
How many Archons you get in now, Dom?
Well, Dom's going to have Dom needs three Archons, doesn't he, for his 30 incubi. So
I haven't even got one.
Well, you need three, mate, because you're running 30 incubi, apparently.
Yeah. Now, don't hold us to this, but maybe it's time to bring back a Real Space Raiders competition, maybe a build your own Archon competition.
Right? Build your own Archon to Dom.
Sounds good. There we go. Maybe we can go full circle. Maybe I can give my custom Mandrakes up as a prize for that when the actual official kit comes out.
That's really fun. And also, with Archons, I could talk for days about Archons. I know, George, we're talking about, like, multiple Archons, and I've always had it where I've Duke Sliskus of his captains, and, like, you know, you've not been a fan.
There he is, he said it. Well done.
Duke Sliskus, there's no video games
this time.
but again, like, there's just so much you can do. You know, you can, like, build, like, a family of Archons. Like, you know, you can have, like, your Sergeant Archons. Like,
that's my main issue with this new detachment. Is I find it really hard to put more than one Archon in my list. Mm. Because lore wise, there are situations where multiple Archons would go on a battlefield. Like, don't get me wrong, but I just can't ever think they would kill each other. And who's, you know, you said if you had, like, an Archon and then his two Drakons, that's fine. But yeah, they're all in the data slate, obviously they're all called Archon. So it's like, well, which one's the boss Archon? But it's my own problem. There's nothing stopping anyone using multiple Archons. Please do, because they are very good. It's just me, from my list building point of view, my old lore fluff bunny head, it just doesn't like doing it. It just doesn't like it.
But George, you love your lore, so let's dive into that, and let's take the Hierarchs, who are the guys, like, you know, the leader level of the Incubi, and you can convert a Hierarch to lead your 10-man Incubi unit. Like, there's so many options. I absolutely love it.
I forgot about the Hierarchs.
Yeah.
You could totally do a Hierarch.
Yeah.
That's I've got tons of Incubi bits lying around. That's giving me an idea. I'm going to build a Hierarch. There we go. I'm going to build two Hierarchs and an Archon, and that'll be for my three Incubi squads. Job done. And then the Fluff Bunny can shut up and go back in his hole and chomp on a carrot.
That's it. Paulie gets animated by Archons. That is this section's name now. Okay, so let's go back after going on a massive Archon tangent. Talk about some of the other data sheets that you're going to see more of and maybe see a little less of, or... Part of me does wonder whether I love the court, and I think the court is amazing, especially if you're a combo in the Tans list. I think they're very, very strong. But I do wonder whether they're going to be a little bit less. I don't think they're ever in vogue anyway. But with Incubi sort of being back and, like, that tantalizing stratagem for shooting, whether you're going to see maybe less court, or maybe just more Incubi, especially with Incubi being cheaper, guys.
Possibly. I think most people would instantly jump on Incubi because they're obviously stronger. And everyone that likes Drukhari likes Incubi. They're one of the big draw points for the faction. But I do think you shouldn't underestimate Court of the Archon. Like, if you try it, I know it's hard to get hold of because you can't buy any of the models like now. Come on, GW. But again, going back to conversions, there are a lot of conversions options we've discussed in previous episodes. If you've missed that or you can't be able to listen, join our Discord. We'll happily tell you. But don't underestimate Court of the Archon. It's deceptively good, and it's only 10 points more than Incubi, or even 5 points more. Can't remember off the top of my head, but it's comparative in cost.
I've run them every game, especially in my successes at GTs and Super Majors, and it's the fights first, which is great, and it's similar to Dom's old preferred playstyle of like ruling the melee phase, and especially having that fights first there. And you have the fights first, you're going to have a succubus now, and you're going to have Lilith for fights first. Like, there's lots of good ability. So, yeah, for me personally, the court will stay there. But I do wonder whether the rampant sort of progression of the Incubi will mean that other newer players might not use them as much. But going to Incubi, they must be the winners of this data slate, right? And detachment, they just win because of the...
They're number one for sure. I think maybe witches, maybe bringing... I think they're the number two winner.
100%.
They get brought back in rather than getting an upgrade. Like, they're the two units that we're now going, okay, let's blow the dust off. Like, let's bring them back in. And it's my preferred playstyle as well. I prefer combat, and I've had a great time just shooting everyone to death with CSM. I now want to go back into the little movement details, which I did so well last time. So I think they're for me the two that stand out to me.
Any other winners and losers at all, potentially?
Well, generally speaking, all our melee has come out on top and better, purely because of the change to Power from Pain. Like, the extra AP is a huge deal, even on things like Talos. Like, their big claws were only AP 2, so now when they become empowered, either through a pain token or because they killed something earlier, now to be AP 3, so they'll be strength 8, AP 3, damage 3, is a really good profile for Marines and custodies and stuff. So I think in general, all our melee have come up a level, and certain units, particularly in the Sky Splinter, are very good, very good and usable. And it's really nice to see, because before, our index was very one-dimensional. It was basically just spam as many lances as you could and hope it's effective against your opponent. It's basically the gameplay for 10th so far.
Okay, so I want to take it back a bit, and we're going to stick on Sky Splinter Assault, but also talk about Real Space Raiders. Who is better, Sky Splinter Assault or Real Space Raiders? Like, for me, I think everyone got extremely excited and thought Real Space Raiders is in the bin. But, you know, if we were to isolate the changes to Drukhari, which weren't for the data sheet, which weren't for the detachment, you would note that you get the extra AP in melee, you get the Archon Controlled Incubi, which is fantastic, and we got all those points drops. If you take those in isolation, I think we still probably would have been a little bit upset. I don't think it would have been enough for Drukhari, but I think a lot of Archons like us would have made it work. Real Space Raiders isn't in a bad position, but is Sky Splinter Assault better?
I don't know. I think they're two different playstyles, if I'm totally honest with you. Like, I think if you want to go down... they're different. If you don't like vehicles, then you stick with Real Space Raiders, and you have a better economy that way. But I think the stratagems in the new Sky, it's just a bit better. So I think in overall, for traditional Archon playstyle, I feel this is the new hotness is kind of the best one. But they're both good. I think, like we were discussing earlier, how like we think everyone's going to play this at first, and then you'll see some more advanced players go back to Real Space Raiders. I think it's good. I think that's my answer.
I think it's going to take the stronger Archons off a bracket immediately. Again, especially whilst it's fresh and hot, whilst people aren't used to it. But I think the very good players out there will realise that actually, if you just gone down the transports, like, there's no real rules. We're not getting any extra pain tokens like you would in the West Coast Raiders. And also, like, my main fear is that it really encourages you to take lots of characters, and obviously you're going to take lots of boats, and you're going to end up just giving loads of points away for secondaries as well, which is a bit of a fear of mine.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Sky. I think, like, it's something that hasn't really, I don't think it's been discussed, but you say you're running 4 to 6 Venoms, 2 to 4 Raiders, plus maybe a Ravager. Like, that's it. That's easy, bring it down, like, straight away if someone wants to go fixed on you. And again, if you're racking, like, Succubi, Lelith, Beastmaster, Archons, and Incubi, you're quickly racking up, like, 5, 6, 7 characters, which is an easy assassinate, because our characters aren't hard to kill. They're really easy to kill if you can catch them, like, if you get them out in the open. So, yeah, it's one of the traps of the faction. I mean, Jakari have always lived and died by their transports. I always tell my opponents, like, if in doubt, shoot a transport, because it's the key to almost all of our mobility, and even more so in this new detachment. And mobility is our one strength that we typically have an advantage on, like, against most opponents. So, yeah, but I think both are good. I think that with just the changes, and there were a few subtle changes to the Real Space Raids. I don't know if you noticed, but they changed the text on the Crucible of Malediction. So before, it was you modify their leadership by 1 when they take the Battle Shock, but now it's reduced the value by 1. So I think before it didn't stack with the Homunculus's ability for -1 to Battle Shock test, but now it does. So now if you're within 6 with the Crucible of Malediction, you force the units within 12 to take a Battle Shock, but if you're within 6, they're taking that Battle Shock at -2, which is actually a big deal for certain matchups, like particularly Necron matchups, where you're trying to stop them from using stratagems before you engage them. Like, that's a little tech piece that you can use to stop that from happening, and also things like Custodes to stop them from fighting first, so you can charge them with other stuff. But I do think both detachments do offer a separate kind of playstyle. Like, I think Real Space Raiders is more take like an all-comers kind of variant, where it's kind of quite generic, but it also favors things like Talos units more so than the Sky Splinter. So if your playstyle is you want to run lots of MSU units and transports, be really mobile, be all over the place and have shenanigans, then definitely the Sky Splinter is better. But if you want a kind of mixed bag and have a better pain token economy and a better CP economy, because you're not going to spend CP on a strats, because generally speaking they all suck, so then the Real Space Raiders is still viable and still good. So yeah, I think they're both good, and it's really nice that we have two detachments. It's like having a mini codex release before we have our codex.
Definitely something to get excited about. And also there's other, you know, mitigating factors, aren't there, with various nerfs and updates to other armies. Dom, would you want to give us a bit of a quick summary of what happened to the other armies in 40k and how that will affect us as the Jakari?
Yes, certainly. Meta Maidlo here, that is my name, and I've come to report that it's been a big shake-up, and some of Jakari's big predators have left. Fantastic. So we've seen CSM have a quadruple nerf, which is good. So bad for me, but it's good for Jakari. We've seen that World Eaters have now been slapped a bit, so they're not as efficient now. So that's going to help. You won't see as many on the top tables, which is really good for us, so we won't get out meleeed with them. We've seen dropping of Eldar. They're pretty much out of the game at the moment. There's some builds which are really good still, but you know, with the Yinkan change and all that, it's going to be a bit harder for them. And spinners as well being stupidly expensive now, so then they're not going to be they've seen that much, and they've had a little slap on the wrist with the abilities. So then the main three, they're gone. I think that's great. Space Marines are still okay, but their big current list, which is the John Lennon one, that is now gone, so thankfully that's good. Sadly, there's two new scary factions which are really gonna I almost think it's unwinnable unless you play it regularly, which is, I think the Grey Knight matchup now is absolutely horrendous. And because they've got all the tools, I've always laughed when I used to play Grey Knights, because it was just weight of shots, which did nothing to me when I was playing CSM. But weight of shots and also extra ignores cover and all that sort of stuff now on the Dread Knights, it's just going to be a bit much. So the old in 9th edition, who's going to, like, you try and hope not to get the Drukhari or the Grey Knights. Now they're going to be fighting together. It's going to be quite bloody. Custodes getting a massive, massive buff means that it's going to be a really hard fight. The only thing we've got against them, which is really good, they cannot score secondaries. So we have to play the primary denial game with them, and then also use our abilities just to have so many units on the board just to get 40 on secondaries. So deny primary in both matchups and just score high in secondaries, they're gonna beat you up. But they are the new boogeymen for the Drukhari, so, and they will be everywhere. So if you are going to tech for anything in your list, only tech for stuff that's going to make those matchups more efficient. And again, the same with orcs as well.
Sorry, Don, just to interrupt you, I've played the Necron matchup once. I need to play it more. I've played the Custodes matchup a couple of times now. There's a couple of other secret things in there that really mess Drukhari up, and I know that my local players are putting it in there specifically because it messes me up. The Inquisitor, whatever her name is, Draxus, yeah, she is incredible.
Like, the indirect, she
absolutely minces Drukhari. Because her shots are out of line of sight, she gets rerolls and all the wazoos and exploding hits, and she is a menace, an absolute menace. And she hides in a bit, usually in a squad of like custody guardians or wardens or something. So if you have ways, again going back to what Sky said, with Drazar, taking solo Drazar because he has precision, or scooting your Lelith over and using the 1 CP heroic challenge, she needs to die ASAP. Because if she survives to the end game when like all your transports are dead and all you're left with are like little chaff units on objectives trying to hold the line, she picks them up like nothing, like absolutely nothing. So yeah, she's one to look out for.
Yeah, 100%. Let me just go through the stats of what she actually does to us, because we don't really have arm saves, so it's really, this hurts. So it's 18 inches, Psychic Tempest, which is indirect fire. It's psychic, which doesn't matter for us, but it's sustained hits 2, 6 shots, strength 6, which is the magic number for us, and damage 2. It's really, really, really good, and it's just annoying, especially because she goes in the unit of Inquisitorial Henchmen, or just any battle line in infantry for the Imperium. So she's one to look out for as well, because she's got that. And then,
I mean, I've seen her being used in the Guardian squad, because the Custodian Guard, they have an ability where if they're either on an objective or targeting a unit on objective, they can fire twice, once per game or something.
Yeah, so it's they get to reroll wounds on the objective, which is nice. Yeah. And then I'm just looking at the data sheet now. Once per battle in your shooter phase, after it was shot, it can shoot again. So it can basically pick off 2 units.
Yeah, so, and because she's in the unit, she gets that as well, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I played against my friend Jack, and he played a blinder of a game. We played like 3 games against each other recently, and all of them have been super close. And the last one we played, he smashed me, and it was because of her. So yeah. now she's on my hit list. I need to kill her ASAP.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, you touched on Necrons a second ago, but I don't think there's much we can tech into other than Drazar. But they annoyingly have that move away strat. So as soon as you get Drazar out of his transport, they're going to move away. So it's a bit annoying there. So Necrons are the biggie man for everyone. I think because people will be taking for them mostly, they will have the hardest time or the easiest time at events. I think it's going to go one or the other way. So we don't really need to tech for Necrons. But yeah, look out for Custodes. And there's one thing to always be careful. If you're thinking the way around Custodes and Worldies, all that sort of stuff, is to get through their CP by battle shocking them, So they can't use fight before you or fight on death, that sort of thing. Sadly, custodies have an ability on their I can't remember which character it is, but it's basically an enhancement which allows them to be unbattleshocked whenever they want. So you can battleshock them in the shooting phase, then they can unbattleshock. So I would stay away from the Void Weavers. I know Paulie were talking about this earlier, and the Death Jester, which both allow you to battleshock units. But I would just advise caution on that in teching for that, because it's not going to work in the Custodes matchup.
Although saying that, Dom, there is also other value to taking a Death Jester, like the fact that he's a lone op is really useful, because you can just stay on an objective at the back even if he's not doing much. So if you want to take a Death Jester, he's still very good. But I'm interested in your opinion, obviously, because I played your friend Aiden, and he thoroughly whooped me with his Sisters of Battle, and they're quite a tough matchup for Jakari in 10th edition. So how are they looking after the update?
They're great. They're still, I think, they're still A tier, and it's quite crazy how it took like one person to win a super major when no one else was winning anything for them to really come into like fruition. But they had a little bit of a drop in their efficiency for their miracle dice. So they used to have this, the Triumph of St. Catherine, which used to basically give you unlimited miracle dice. Now it's changed a bit, so it's not as efficient, which is great, and I don't think it's an auto include anymore. But they play the MSU game, but backed up with amazing indirect. What's going to happen now though is I played in the final of a GT the other day versus Jettai, and annoyingly it was the mission where the objective disappeared, and he had the final objective, and we both said if either of us get the last disappearing objective, it's a win. And I was like, yeah, and sadly he got it. But anyway, it's the Sisters tanks with the autocannons and heavy bolters and the Hunter Killer missile. They are insanely efficient into Jakari, and I think with the more Jakari that we're going to see around the room, and the more orcs and the more Necrons, you're going to see a lot more of them. Just be super careful if you come up against them. They are insanely good at Overwatch, so just be careful of that. So Sisters are another Predator, and I know I've listed all of these factions off as Predators for us. I just want you to have all the information you can, so when you go to the table, you can actually, you know, think carefully about your interaction with them, because sometimes it is just playing the primary denial game whilst you are scoring more on secondaries. And that's basically from a team's perspective as well. Jakari are amazing in teams now, so just be careful. But this army is very good. It's not a win now, so, you know, be clever, play it right, and you'll win your games.
Very well said, Dom. And especially talking about teams, I think Sky Spin to Assault is going to be very good for that as well, isn't it? I think in certain matchups, just that ability for that finesse MSU primary denial, it might be the army where you might be using it to take a soft loss or try and turn a loss, expect a loss into a win.
Yeah, so oddly, I think just Dark Lance spam is the team's list. But if you want to go for a pressure list, I think then you go for the Sky Splinter. I think it's very, very good, and there's some skews that you can do really nicely in there, like going the mass incubi and mass witch route. As long as you just don't give up easy bring it down points, I think you're golden there. Don't give up assassinate and bring it down, and then you're just a really, really good teams list.
So we are coming towards the end of what has been a fantastic episode of Real Space Raiders. Let's talk about our army lists and our plans, whether they include any sort of extra hobby plans, because we need to get some units up to scratch. Shall I go first with my Sky Serpent Assault? So I am taking two Archons, one with the Nightmare Shroud. I'm going to take a Beastmaster still, Lilith Hesperax, and a Succubus, as well as Spiteful Raider. Now, that is quite a lot of characters. I might drop one. I've not decided yet, but again, it's with the points. I'm not sure what to bring in for it. Two units of Cabalot Warriors, which are going to split across the Venoms, and one's going to go for Court. Two units of Witches, one 10 Lady Witch unit, and two 5-mans as well. Obviously, 10 will go Lilith, and then 2 5s will go Venoms. There are two Venom. Sorry, there are four. No, there are two Raiders and 4 Venoms. There is a Court of the Archon, 1 Cronus, 1 units of 10 Incubi, 2 units of Mandrakes, and 3 units of Scourges. Now, this is a list which I'm really excited to use. I think it's got a lot of pressure in it. I know it's going to require some finesse. I think going into games, my first events, I'm not expecting to go to an RTC and 3-0 it. I'm not expecting to go to a GT and 4-1 it. I think it's going to take a lot of learning. But I'm very, very, very excited. Again, we discussed it to death, but the pain token economy, you know, is a bit of a worry. And my mitigation discussion earlier, I haven't really done much with that in this list. There is only 1 Cronus, and again, whether do I actually get rid of that succubus for another Cronus? Probably, but it does just tip me really over the edge and bring it down. But I'm really excited. I'm really looking forward just the Wraith-like retreat work with all the witches in the list. And also, you know, the pressure with the brick of Incubi, the court in the midfield as well, and still, you know, a lot of shenanigans, a lot of movement around with Mandrake. So that is my list. George, what do you think of this list, sir?
Sounds like a big old pile of rubbish, mate. But no, it sounds really good. I think it's early days, and obviously, you want to try out new stuff, right? Like, I think everyone wants to try. I say new stuff. It's like it's returning things. So I think your list sounds like it's got a good flexibility. You might have a bit of issue with pain token economy, but I think the detachment itself will have an issue with pain token economy. And I think that's something we're going to have to find a balance between offensive output and threat, and also the ability to keep that threat going throughout the game, because once you run out of pain tokens, you're going to lose that threat basically. So but yeah, just give it a go, mate. I'm surprised you've ditched the court though, because I think you've been using the court the entire edition, haven't you?
They're not in the raider currently, but the idea is to be able to have them in a raider. Not in a raider, you know, sort of move what's in the army around. It's quite flexible based on who I play, who are going what sort of transport. So, yeah, I'm excited. I do wonder whether I need one more unit of Incubi. In terms of hobby projects to sort of take this list further, I have been experimenting with a second unit of Beasts. I think I do prefer just having one, but I will work on my Beasts as well just to make them a bit nicer. I want to bring in some new models for those. And obviously, I want to work on my Cult of Arha, the Striker Scorpion Incubi kit batches I've been working on. I'm probably going to try and paint those up as my Incubi that I use in my army. Might even work on 10 of those as well, just to make them stand out. And obviously in the future, looking to add some new Mandrakes as well, which again, we spoke about at the start of the episode, but very excited about. Dom, you've worked on your first Drakari list for 10 years. What was in that?
10 years. It feels like 10 years. But yeah, let me get it up. I didn't have it ready, so I call it Broken Drakari, but I don't think it is broken.
Are we just going to leave that hanging that Dom just said, let me get it up twice? We're just going to let that slide, are we?
Yeah. Yes. So this was like my third approach at doing the list, because I think I went straight away in with like 6 Venoms, but then after watching the battle reports, I was like, no, you kind of need more. And then I had a chat with George and I was like, okay, maybe not this approach, but the initial approach is this. And I'll tell you what I'm changing afterwards. So Triple Archon with then a Beast Pack, then Cabalet Warriors all kitted out, then just 5 racks, Venom, 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 so only 4, double Kronos, 3 Incubi, 3 Mandrake, 3 Scourge, and then 2 Squads of 2 Talos with Haywire and twin liquefire guns. The reason the Talos are in is because I wanted a bit more durability, but I think I'll speak to George and Paulie, I'm probably going to drop them and then bring in Court of the Archon, because it just gives it quite a nice bit of durability there, even though Talos don't really rely that heavily on the pain tokens. It does help. And then I think what you replace with them, so if you add the Court and a Squad of Witches and Lilith, and we still got loads of points, and another Venom, let me add the Court, that's 10 points under, and then you just get an upgrade. So then the list is probably, this is what I would probably run if I was going to an RTT or a GT or a major at the weekend. It would be Archon, Archon with some incubi, then Archon with Spiteful Raider with some incubi, then Archon with Nightmare Shroud with some incubi, then Beastmaster Lilith with witches, Cablites kitted out, Rax witches, then five Venoms, Court of the Archon, double Chronos, triple incubi, triple Mandrake, and triple Scourge. I think that's the approach that I would go. So I'll give you two lists there. There you go.
Two lists, double the joy. All very, very good.
And George, what are you thinking about running?
I don't think I should tell anyone because everyone will nick my ideas. So I'm gonna break the mold and run loads of incubi with Archons.
30.
I think like there's a few that I've like experimented with. I think the one I like the most, just because it's it gives me an excuse to use one of my favourite models, is the Tantalus Party Bus list. So in that one, I got like an Archon with a Sadistic Fulcrum, two Beastmaster units, Lelith, a Carbolite Warrior Squad, a Witch Squad, a couple of Raiders, a couple of Venoms, a couple of Chronos, a couple of units of Grotesques to go in the Raiders, a couple of Mandrakes, a Ravager, a couple of Scourge, and a Tantalus. And a Court of the Archon, sorry. But it doesn't use a lot of transports. I think I can do a bit better, but that was just something I slapped together to see if I can get the Tantalus in the list. But yeah, it's going to be an ongoing process. But I think, like, army list construction-wise, you're still going to be running things like Ravagers, Scourge, and if you're not, you probably should, because you still need Dark Lances. They're still going to be your biggest damage dealers. An incubi are a nice choice, but they're not going to punch into like knights and stuff. You're just not going to do it. So you're still going to need a good amount of Dark Lance fire in every Jukari list. It's just a question of like how many transports you want. Although I am really, really I did write a list earlier. I was trying to squeeze in six Raiders and six Venoms, but you lose everything basically. You can't take Ravagers, you can't take Scourge. I think I can just about fit one Mandrake squad in, but I can have, yeah, like I think it was six Venoms with Incubi, Archons, and I split two Witch squads with three Succubus and Lelith between the four other Venoms, and then the Raiders were filled with Carbolite Warriors and Grotesques, and it was quite a fun looking list, but I don't think it'd be very good. It would just be fun, but yeah, that's me. But I said I always adapt my list. I don't think I've ever taken the same list to more than one event. It just changes every time,
and that is a very good approach. I think everyone's going to be testing a lot of ideas. And again, like we spoke about on the episode earlier, talk to your friends, talk to your fellow Archons, join our Facebook group, join our Discord as well. I think the code will be in the show notes and also on our socials as well. It's just a really, really exciting time for Jukari right now. So that brings us to the end of this episode of Real Space Raiders. I think you'll all agree it is a very, very exciting time to be a Jukari player. Again, if you want to discuss this further with us, please join our Discord. Talk to us on our socials, and again, give us feedback. We actually, the last episode, got some really nice feedback, and it's always great. We always like to know what you want to know more of. That's why we injected a bit more hobby content into this episode, because we know you want more of that. We'll be back again. Thank you very much for listening, and happy raiding.